Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, snapped is what this is.
Why? This is not our first week on the job. And it's still awkward.
I know. And we try to like talk some before so that we don't get weird, but we're just weird.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's just how it is, but
just the way we roll.
It really is. But you know, one day. Now, we're on year three of really? Podcasting altogether, so we're very hopeful that by year
four
or five,
we'll smooth out all of the weirdness.
Yeah, for sure. But I think you guys are weird, too, with us, so.
Weird's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it works. Totally works.
I just wish that we could maybe not be so awkward on the intro and outro. That's something that I would personally like for you to work on.
Oh. I feel attacked.
You should. It was an attack.
Yeah. Okay. All right. It was. Everybody was here for it. It's embarrassing.
For you.
For me. Yeah. But all right. Well, I will add that to my list of things to work on.
Okay. Great.
All right. So this episode is Ruth Ann Aaron.
Sure is. Aaron with one A. She doesn't have time for that extra A.
No, she's a busy lady.
Yeah.
She had everything a woman could want.
She had it all, the family, the career, the success within the community.
She made a fortune in the boom years of the 1980s.
And she was a smart person. She knew the industry.
She had a rich doctor for a husband.
They made a very nice couple. They looked terrific.
And she was a rising star in the Maryland Republican Party. But when she lost her bid for the GOP Senate nomination in 1994, Ruth Ann swore revenge.
We want to read about somebody in the open.
A staggering tale of ambition, greed, and murder for hire, next on Snapped.
She was born Ruth Ann Greenzweig in 1943 in upstate New York.
I feel like, and this is just all of the things that she accomplished before I was just surprised because I know how this show took place in 2004. That's when they aired it, right?
Uh-huh.
In my mind, that was 2 years ago.
Right.
So it was just kind of interesting to hear the dates and be like, oh, okay. She's born in the 40s and then she was married by 60s and then, you know, stuff
yeah.
like that. Where I'm like, okay. Like it just shifted for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's like, it seems so far away.
Yes.
But, you know, we're inching up there, aren't we?
Ugh. I can't even about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. She grew up really poor. There's a reporter that we hear from several times in this episode, Candace Thompson. She said that Ruth Ann had blue-collar roots, and her family owned a small restaurant where she grew up. And because of that, it was like, you know, her parents owned this restaurant, and they pretty much worked around the clock. They were always at the restaurant. There was always something that needed to be done.
24/7. Like, they were some hard, like, Brooks and Dunn style. I'm a hard-working man.
Exactly. Yeah.
But both of them.
But they wear a chef hat, not a steel hard hat.
True.
We also hear from Blair Lee, who is a work colleague of Ruth Ann's, so he knew her really well. He said that she was driven and had tons of intensity.
That's an interesting way to yeah. describe someone.
Yeah, because I feel like if you are introducing somebody to your friend or like setting somebody up on a blind date with your friend and you're like, hey, she's really driven. She's super intense.
I would run for the hills, to yeah. be honest with you, because somebody that comes at me with too much intensity or energy
uh-huh.
freaks me out and I shrivel inside of myself.
Well, yeah, it's just like the word intense. I mean, I just feel like it doesn't have excellent connotations. Like, and as we get further into the episode, like, I think he's spot on. her intensity doesn't play out in a positive way for her.
Yeah.
She's nefarious with it.
Yes.
I would say.
Sure.
Yeah. She ended up going to Cornell University. She was very smart.
Very, very, very smart. Which is kind of like, I mean, it shows how driven she was, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, because
if you harnessed that in a good way.
Exactly. Like, think about the things you could do. And she, you know, her parents ran this restaurant. She did not come from wealth. She ended up at this really renowned school. She studied microbiology, and that's where she met her husband, Barry Aaron. And at that time, he was a pre-med student, but everybody was just like, Barry was such a supportive, loving husband. Like, he took a backseat to Ruth Ann. She had all these ambitions. He had ambitions too, but
he was just supported her and was like, you got this, girl. I'm going to be on the sidelines cheering you on.
Yeah. And like, and he could still do what he wanted to do. He could still have a medical practice and support her. And that's what he did. Helen Smith, our favorite forensic psychologist, she said that Ruth Ann had narcissistic tendencies.
That tendency to see themselves as special and unique. Those types of women tend to be drawn towards, and only drawn towards, those people who have high status and who can make them look good.
And if you know anything about narcissistic personalities or narcissistic tendencies, spot on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all about their facade and how they look.
Yes, yeah. Even if it's not necessarily like how they look physically, but it's like that persona that they're putting out. And she had to have that facade of like high society, that upper echelon kind of thing. Like, she wanted to be married to a doctor. That was a plus for her, because then she could go in all these like social circles that she felt like otherwise she couldn't be in. Mm-hmm. And that just made her look good to other people. They had two kids together, Joshua and Dana. They settled in Potomac, which was, like we said, a super wealthy area of Washington, D.C. And by the mid-80s, Barry's urology practice was a-booming.
Business was a-booming.
Mm-hmm. And because of that, they went to every high society function. They said that, I mean, because you know how it is with doctors, like they go to all these like charity events, they're on
boards
of stuff.
They go to galas.
Yeah, they go golf at the country club together and like all the things. So she's now traveling in that circle. She was always very well put together. She always had, they called her sharply dressed. She always like looked perfect.
Barry goes crazy for a sharp dressed lady.
He sure does.
We hear from John Harrison, who is an attorney, and in my humble opinion, seemed like maybe he took a Benadryl, didn't realize it was going to make him sleepy before he was interviewed. I don't know, but he's like,
Ms. Aaron was a land speculator and desired to become an honest-to-God developer.
Ruth Ann was an honest-to-God developer, and she would acquire land.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. It seemed a little confused, out of it, maybe.
Yeah, a little out of it. Like he could have laid down and just taken a big nap.
Yeah, same girl. But yeah, she made a ton of money during the real estate boom of the 80s. She started buying kind of like rundown properties and I guess
flipping them.
Yeah. And she ended up, it wasn't just like, oh, this is a hobby of mine. She made like a full-blown company out of it. And she was making a ton of money. Like, this is what's interesting to me is, like, a lot of times through this episode, or I don't know, several times I heard it where they were like, you know, she had everything. She had a doctor husband. She had a really beautiful house. She drove a fancy car. What more could you want? It's like, okay, well, maybe she did. Like, there's nothing wrong with her wanting to do something on her own, like to have something that's hers outside of being a wife and mother. Like, there are women who are totally content to do that, and that's totally fine. There are also women who are like, I want to do something professionally.
Well, I think it plays into that gender role mentality where it's like, okay, well, the woman, it's kind of her place to stay home. As long as you look pretty, you got a successful husband, nice house, kids, that's all you should need, right?
Yeah. What more could you want? It's like, well, there are people who do want more than that. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But what's interesting about Ruth Ann is she got that. She had this like very successful real estate development company. Honest to God.
She was an honest-to-God real estate developer.
I mean, so she had this very successful company, and she was making, like, didn't they say millions of dollars? I mean, this was not... This was not like...
in the 80s.
Yeah, this wasn't like she made $5,000 over the course of a year, you know, making headbands on Etsy, and if you do that, totally great. But, like, she had a full-fledged business out of this, but it wasn't enough. Like, she liked making that money, but she wanted to go into politics. We hear from Dr. James Murray, a forensic psychologist, and he said, and this is so, I mean, makes a lot of sense, that politics for a narcissist is like a candy store. Every vote is validating how well liked you are. So he's like, you know, it's like they're going crazy. They're a kid in a candy store. Like, every time they get a vote, they're like, this person loves me. This person validates me. This person, you know.
It's like hitting that like button on Facebook. Like, ooh, this is proof that I'm well liked.
Yeah, exactly.
In 1992, she scheduled an appointment to the planning board. So what Ruth Ann did was she skipped running for the city council, which was like the obvious choice for her to run for. And she was like, nope, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go for the U.S. Senate. Like, she dreamed big. I'm surprised she didn't go for president, but...
Well, she got in on the, like, she became part of the planning board or whatever.
Yes.
And everybody's like, okay, so your next step is, the city council. Like, you go in order, right?
You gotta walk before you run, baby.
Yeah, and she's like, yeah, no, I'm just gonna do the Senate. No big deal. Like,
and she was up against Bill Brock, who was a former Tennessee senator, and Arthur Kahn, he was another attorney. He said that they were really close in the polls. Like, the votes were super, super close, and they didn't really know who was going to win. Because, you know, Ruth Ann's kind of a little bit of an underdog. They didn't really see if she know if she was going to make it. But she was so close to making it.
Yeah, it was kind of like one of those against all odds situations where people were not expecting her to do well at all, especially against a seasoned politician.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she went from the planning board, which I don't even know what that is. Is that just in the city or whatever?
No idea.
And then she goes straight to U.S. Senate, and people are like, didn't think it was going to go anywhere, but they were super close. So Bill Brock had to do something to, would you say, level the playing field or...
Knock her out of the running altogether.
Yeah, knock her out of the running. So he got wind, or his campaign team got wind of... some real estate fraud lawsuits against her. There were a few, like, civil suits, or maybe there was just two, but there were a couple civil suits where people basically said that she had duped them, that whatever happened in the sale of this,
it was fraudulent.
Yeah, there was something about it that was fraudulent. They don't go into details about it. They just say there were two suits, but it was a civil suit. It was not a criminal proceeding. But Bill Brock's team put it out there that she'd been convicted of fraud and that, you know, obviously she's not a law-abiding citizen. She's got judgments against her or whatever.
Do you want that as a senator?
Right. Somebody who's been convicted of fraud, which in a civil suit, you wouldn't consider that convicted of fraud, right? I mean, because like O.J. Simpson had a civil suit against him for the wrongful death of Nicole Brown. And he lost that, but he was not convicted of murder.
Mm-hmm.
He was just found liable. So, you know, I think using the words convicted of fraud is probably not being 100% truthful, but
would you put politicians in a category of being only truth tellers?
Right. Yeah. What's funny is he's like, do you want somebody in your Senate who's committed fraud? And it's like, so are we going to start over then? Kick them all out? Because...
And also, you're like kind of committing fraud all by yourself right now, saying that.
Yeah, it's like lying by omission, or I don't know, it's a step above that.
Putting out false information about somebody. Yeah. But that's what smear campaigns are.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, she did have the lawsuits against her, but it wasn't a criminal proceeding. So they kind of made it, you know, sound a little bit like that. I'm all for getting rid of all fraudulent politicians, I just think we wouldn't have any left.
Yes.
It's kind of like their bag, you know?
Exactly.
So Brock wins the election. And guess who Ruth Ann blames? The two attorneys that testified against her in that civil trial. So that was Arthur Kahn and John Harrison. And, this was 10 years earlier, but they had testified against her in this suit. And she felt that they were the reason that she even lost the suit. And then I guess, you know, it comes back to bite her 10 years later.
Ruth Ann Arendt just grew to hate those two men and saw those two men as the reason she was not a U.S. senator.
She's not mad at Brock. Like, when they said, you know, she blamed, like, who did she blame for it? I'm like, well, she's going to blame Brock, right?
That's honestly what I was thinking, you know?
Yeah, but she blamed the two attorneys that testified in that case. And they can't be the only people that testified in it. Like, I don't know if you're going to blame somebody, like maybe the two people that brought the lawsuits against you, but I don't know. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting that that's who she picked.
It happens, though. It's crazy. Like, people who murder the attorney that prosecuted them or whatever, you know?
Yeah, right. It's like somebody, you were going to get prosecuted. Didn't matter who it was.
This person, yeah, that took the case, yeah.
So during that time, I mean, she's devastated. She's lost this bid. She's never lost anything before. She's never failed at anything before. This is a huge hit to her ego. She is leaning on Barry for support. Like, she's got her family. He's very supportive. Like, Candace Thompson, the journalist, was like, you know, Barry was the one who was, like, going to get her a drink, going to make sure that she had everything that she needed. Like,
he really took care of her.
Yeah, he was always, like, checking on her, making sure that she was okay. So she didn't give up on politics. In 1997, she ran for city council. Finally.
It's about time, girlfriend.
Yeah, it's like, okay, now you want to run for city council.
Oh, you didn't want us before.
Mm-mm.
But now that you can't have the Senate, now all of a sudden you want us.
Now you want us. Well, she can't have that either.
Why?
Now she wants it, she can't have it. Because on June the 2nd, the Potomac Police Department got a very strange phone call. The landfill owner, Billy Mossberg, said that Ruth Ann had recently contacted him about hiring a hitman.
And police are like, I do what?
Yeah. But they didn't believe him at first. And they kind of made it sound like they didn't believe him because he was a landfill owner.
They're like, what is this high society, highfalutin politician talking to this garbage dump owner?
Yeah, and they're like, we just didn't know if it was true, so we had to, you know, make sure that he wasn't lying to us. So
they tapped his phone.
Yeah, they tapped his phone, and they said that they wanted him to call her from the parking lot of the police station and get her to talk about it.
And what Billy said, and this is, y'all know if you've listened to us long enough, I guess. We love an accent. We love an accent. A Maryland accent is a whole different ballgame, though. I've never heard anything quite like it. It's almost Southern, but the O's are very different. Mm-hmm. But he says,
it was less than a minute she called back. I told her, I said, I got somebody can help you. One sergeant says to the other sergeant, what do we got? The guy says, we got the mother lewd here.
And they got the mother lewd.
Yeah, when I saw it written here, I was like, oh, she spelled mother load wrong. Mother lewd. But that's how we said it. Yeah, it's so funny.
I needed to, like, physically write it down to mentally remember it. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's hard to remember how to say it. So they tap the phone. She immediately talks about it.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I think I got somebody that can help you out. And she's like, okay, great. Give me all the information. Like, whatever. And she said she wanted to read about somebody in the obits.
In the obits.
And they were like, oh, jackpot. So they get a detective to go undercover, Terry Ryan. He's going to play the part of the hitman. And he gets in touch with her. And he's like, okay, well, you know, if we're going to do this, I'm going to need some information. I need to know who it is that you want killed. And she's like, no probs, girl. Here you go.
And the way she says it, like, one of the, it might have been Candace, that said, it was just super eerie and crazy to hear her saying this, like she's ordering off of a menu, like her lunch or something. She's like, okay, first name, Arthur Kahn, K-A-H-N. And then she's like, second name, A-R-O-N, Barry Aaron. We're like, what did Barry do?
What?
Yeah, like Barry, all Barry did was like stand by you, support you, bring you iced tea or whatever. He, Tammy Wynette style, stood by his man.
I know. And then she's like, all right, I'm going to have him whacked.
Yeah. Guess what? Whacked.
Yeah, totally whacked. And all because he wanted a divorce. And she was like, well, here's the problem though. If he divorces me, I'm not going to get on the city council. It's the city council, Ruth Ann. My God. So she's like, it would look better if I was a widow for my political career than if I was a divorcee. Because I'm trying to project this like family woman image. Are you serious?
That's like such a contradiction in terms. And also like, not that any position of power or whatever would be worth having someone whacked over, but it's literally the city council. Like it's the treasurer of the library. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, seriously?
Yeah. It's not this like position of such power that, and yeah, like you said, nothing's worth getting whacked over, but like, it's not a presidential campaign. It's not like, are you serious? And I mean, I guess she was looking at it as like
a stepping stone, right, to go further.
Yeah, but still, I mean, come on.
Your loving husband of how many years?
Yeah.
Gave you two children? Okay.
Okay. Okay, Ruthann. Okay. Okay. They discuss payment. Hmm. So he says, all right, it's going to be $10,000 for the first job, but I need a $1,000 down payment. And she's like, how about I give you $500? And he's like, what? Fine, $500.
I am just shocked. I love a good deal. I'll shop around for something. It's amazing to me, anytime you hear about a hitman, how little people are willing to pay to have yeah. somebody taken out.
Yeah, they're like, are you serious right now? Like, yeah, I thought it was just going to be like $800 or
yeah,
whatever.
I refuse. I am not paying more than $500 yeah. for this.
Also, you would think a hitman would want to take everything up front because you can't unkill them.
Well, I think probably in this case, it's different, obviously, because yeah. it's an undercover police officer, detective. Yeah,
they just need an exchange of money.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, just give me a quarter.
Yeah.
We'll call anything. It a day.
Yeah, exactly. So she negotiates it down to the $500. They decide that they're going to do like a money drop. Her plan was, this is on June the 9th, she's going to drop this bag of money or envelope of money or whatever. I guess it was an envelope. At a hotel mm-hmm. nearby. And so she leaves it at the front desk and she says, gives him a fake name or whatever. This person is going to come by and pick this up. And she wore a red wig.
A trench coat. Sunglasses.
She had a fanny pack on.
Sure did. She kind of went.
Oh, and a big floppy hat.
Big floppy hat. She went all out on a disguise.
Yeah, she did. She was like,
which, let's be honest though, if you ever found yourself in the situation, I hope to God we never do. If you did, wouldn't you want to like go for the gold? Like go for the Oscar. Go for.
Yeah, how fun would it be to dress up as like a criminal?
Well, I just feel like I think about everything in terms of how cute the outfit's going to be. So like when we decided years ago, we're like, let's go play tennis. And we say play tennis very loosely because literally all we did was just knock a ball back and forth and giggle. But I was like, ooh, I'm going to need a tennis skirt. You know? Like,
yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Gotta look the part. She was arrested the same day. And she drove her own car. So like,
it was her Jeep Cherokee.
Yeah. So, okay, like, you're going out on this disguise and then you like pull up at the front desk in your own car. That's like half of a disguise, I would say.
Yeah. Like you went so far, yet not far at all. I don't know.
Because the front desk people could be like, okay, well, the woman who came in and dropped it off had red hair and she drove a red Jeep Cherokee. And it's like,
and here's the license plate.
Yeah. Like, come on. So They arrest her. They process her Jeep Cherokee, and inside of it, they found the red wig, the floppy hat, the trench coat. So, like, they find all the pieces of her disguise in there. And, of course, she did drop the money off. So, now there's been that exchange. Her trial began February 25th, 1998. And if convicted, she faced 3 life sentences. She pled not guilty. And she pled not guilty by reason of insanity. So, here is what I found interesting about that. First of all, bold. Second of all, if your whole thing for wanting Barry killed was that you thought that having a divorce would look bad in your political career, how's it going to look when you're going to great lengths to prove that you're not sane? If she got off with a not guilty verdict, you can't have a political career after that. It's over. Because now you're like, you're not mentally stable. Like, you can't get elected anymore. So I don't understand, like...
Right. Where did you think that was going to lead you?
Yeah.
But it seems like with Ruth Ann specifically, she was like, well, no. I only have bouts of mental insanity. Like, you know, that was then. I'm good now. It's fine.
Yeah. Now,
just a short amount of time.
Exactly. I have no doubt that if she had gotten a not guilty verdict, she would have tried to run for something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and find no problem with it. But the police had a ton of evidence against Ruth Ann. They had all those tapes. They ended up having 12 tapes total of her talking back and forth with either the landfill owner or...
detective.
Yeah, the detective. She's spelling their names out. I mean, she sounds very lucid.
100%. And she even says in the tapes, I want to see somebody in the obits.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that means?
Yeah, she's like, is that blunt enough for you? Like, you understand what you're doing. You understand what you're doing. You understand the consequences. Like, this is not somebody who doesn't know right from wrong at the time. And it also really bothers me that this poor guy who owns a landfill is just like trying to make an honest living. And she's like, well, I am fancy and rich, so I don't know any criminals. So I'm going to assume that since you work with garbage, that you yourself are garbage and you'll kill somebody for me because you probably just need the money.
Or know somebody who does.
Yeah, like, how rude is that? Like,
she would have considered me a garbage person, and I know no one that could commit a crime like that.
Exactly. Like, just because you're not rich doesn't mean that you're a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
It's amazing to me, too, because Ruth Ann came from a not wealthy upbringing. You would think that that could have maybe humbled her, but the narcissist in her won't allow it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. They also found in her car books on hitmen. The one guy said, like, the famous book, like, The Hitman or something. I never heard of it.
And it was, like, diagrams and, like, a how-to on finding a hitman.
Yeah. I wonder if the first chapter was, like, go to your local landfill.
Exactly.
And ask the owner, because they are notorious for knowing hitmen.
Yeah.
What is going on? She also had books on how to make homemade silencers. And I wonder, was she planning on doing the hit herself?
See, that's not... I don't understand that, because whenever they did a scan of her house, they found plenty of materials for making silencers. Like, she was in the act of trying to make a silencer.
Yeah, so, like, is this something she was going to give to the hitman? Like, you would think a hitman could handle that himself.
You would think.
Yeah, but they found all that stuff. It definitely does not look good. I mean, that's like a mountain of evidence to overcome. But she's playing the card that she was crazy when all this happened because she had brain damage. But did they say what the brain damage was from? They never said. They just said she had brain damage.
Well, and that wasn't the only thing that they said about it. They also claimed that... because the defense brought in a team of experts to validate the fact that she had brain damage. But they also claimed that she had mental and sexual abuse brought on by her father when she was younger that had driven her to do this,
mm-hmm.
which is not substantiated at all. No one was agreed to that, or, oh, yeah, I've heard of that before, or her dad was very abusive or whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nobody, like none of her friends or family members or anything were like, yeah, she told me about that, or I witnessed how he treated her.
And not to say that you have to have witnesses for that to be true, but the fact that she was like, wait, no, I have brain damage. Oh, no, wait, but my dad did this to me. It's like the story's changing so much and there's so many different excuses.
Yeah. And they don't go together unless she was saying that she had brain damage from like her dad throwing her down a flight of stairs or something. Like, I don't know, but
they didn't really go into a ton of detail. And like we've said before about these early episodes, they're only half an hour long. So they kind of skim over a lot of stuff. You get like a highlights.
Yeah.
Brief overview.
So the defense had, you know, their experts saying, oh yeah, she's got brain damage. She had all this like emotional and whatever other kind of abuse from her dad. Prosecutors brought in their own team and they were like, no, she doesn't.
Mm-mm.
No, she does not. And the defense even turned Barry into a villain. They were acting like he was this
tyrant to live with and that he kind of ran everything and she had to be what he wanted her to be, which is just so, it's fitting for a narcissist because they are 100% always going to be the victim.
Mm-hmm.
They always have to paint somebody else. And that didn't happen. And if it did, I didn't do it. And if I did, it wasn't my fault or something.
It wasn't that big of a deal. And if it was, it wasn't my fault.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a narcissist summed up. So it's like, she's got to be like, well, okay, who else can I throw under the bus here?
Mm-hmm.
When Barry is 100% a victim.
Yeah, totally. And she's the one that ran everything. He's the one that took a backseat to everything. He's the one that, like, put his entire life on hold. And
because God forbid he takes any spotlight off of her.
Yeah. And he really tried to wait on the divorce because he knew that she was having, like, you know, a hard time with everything, like when she had lost her Senate campaign and then she's running for city council. He didn't want to do that in the middle of that. Like he was like, I don't want to hurt your campaign. Like, I don't want to do that, but I cannot
live like
wait.
This anymore.
Yeah, I can't wait anymore to start my own life because right now I'm just like anybody who's with a narcissist is literally just a supporting role to the narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they are. They don't get to have their own things. They don't get to
have their own feelings, their own emotions, their own anything.
None of that. Yeah. A narcissist takes all of that. So he couldn't wait anymore. And like, who can blame him? And she's going to turn that around on him now that they're at trial and say that basically just project everything that she was doing onto him, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of worked.
Yeah. Because everybody was like, okay, so the jury goes in, you know, to deliberate, and everybody knows what the answer is going to be because it's obvious. Like,
but she did such a good job, and I think this is it's also telling of a narcissist. She knew exactly how to play that jury and say the right things and be as charismatic as she needed to. So the picture of her before is very put together. She's wearing all the right clothes. She's chic while being understated, like all these things. But then they go to court, and she looks like dumpy. Mm-hmm. Like, she just looks kind of disheveled, not put together.
And in the courtroom, Ruth Ann certainly looked ill.
During her Senate campaign, she was a sharply dressed, well-groomed. To see her then in the courtroom, there's no other word for it, frumpy sweaters, no makeup, her hair not arranged, always manipulating this Kleenex in her hand, and at times during the trial, rocking back and forth.
Yeah, she, like, her hair was never, like, they said it was never arranged. It was just, like, kind of wild. She wasn't, like, obviously she wasn't brushing it. She wasn't coloring it, obviously, at that point. She was wearing what they said were, like, frumpy sweaters. And before, like you said, she would wear stuff that was fitted.
Tailored to her.
Yeah, tailored to her. And now she's wearing just, like, oversized things. She even sat at trial and would rock back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said that she had this, like, tissue or something, and she would like fidget with it in her hands all the time.
Yeah, they said she was like manipulating this tissue in her hands the
whole time. Yeah, like always doing something with it, moving it around, like arranging this tissue. And that's just a play into that mental instability, I guess. I don't know. But so she did exactly what she needed to do to make it look like she's not mentally stable. And they had a hung jury. The judge said there was one juror that was just, he said that she had a background in like child emotional abuse, and she just believed everything that Ruth Ann said about her dad and just would not budge on the fact that she felt like that Ruth Ann, I don't know that it was like justified, but that was a mitigating factor.
Right. And that's the thing. Narcissists need empaths to work. Like, they need somebody who's going to buy what they're selling for that to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she found somebody.
And like, okay, even if her father was abusive, even if that's true, that doesn't mean that you get to go and hire people to kill other people. Like,
yeah.
You know, there's lots of people who unfortunately suffer through abuse all through their childhood, and they don't turn out to get convicted of conspiracy to commit murder. Like,
yeah, that's not something that you can just use whenever you need to break the law and try to get people murdered.
Yeah, exactly. And she just, regardless of whatever happened before, she was not criminally insane at the time of this. She knew what she was doing. She obviously was taking steps to hide it. She wasn't going around telling everybody, look, I hired a hitman. She even negotiated a better deal on her down payment because she didn't want to pay that much up front. Like,
she got an entire disguise to try to
make
the drop for the money.
Yeah, if she had no idea that what she was doing was wrong, then she wouldn't have taken that step. Why do you need to hide yourself if you're doing nothing wrong?
Mm-hmm.
So the judge had to declare a mistrial. He said it was like obvious after talking to this juror, she's not going to budge. So he declared a mistrial, and Ruth Ann was free until her retrial. The prosecution was like, you know, immediately, we're going to do this again. And Ruth Ann surprised everybody and pled no contest. She just gave up, and they were just like, that never happens.
Right.
Not with her.
Well, it's pretty amazing how hard she fought it before, and then maybe she just was exhausted by it. Just, okay.
Yeah, I guess so. Here's what is also very frustrating, and we have said this on the other podcast plenty. Plea deals only benefit guilty people, because when they were going after her in a trial when she pled not guilty, they were looking at 3 life sentences. She pleads no contest, and she gets 2 18-month sentences to be served consecutively. So that's a huge difference. So if you felt like she needed to be in jail for life, why is it that if she admits to doing it, that she now only needs to be in there for
3 years?
Yeah.
So it's like 3 life sentences turned into 3 years.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, that doesn't. Like, either she needed to be in jail for 3 years and that was appropriate, or she needed to be in jail for life. Which one of those is appropriate? They are so vastly different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because she admitted to it, I don't understand how that automatically just, like, says, okay, well, she's safe after 3 years then.
Yeah, she's not going to do this again if somebody crosses her.
And it's not like her pleading guilty at this point saved the time and expense of a trial. They already went through a trial.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't understand why this plea deal, like, obviously they wanted to get her, they wanted to give her some type of incentive or whatever, but if you were thinking a life sentence, could you not have given her 50 years? I mean, she still has a chance to get out. Like,
well, and who's to say? If I was Barry, I would be scared.
Yeah.
She got out after 3 years. Like, obviously, she doesn't have the cognitive capacity to be like, well, this person did me wrong. In my opinion, I'm going to deal with it on my own. Everything is fine. Like she puts the blame. It's like strange placement of blame. Like, okay, you're the one who did me wrong, and now you have to die because of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure everybody, those other two attorneys, I'm sure they're scared too, because it's like, yeah.
Although it's weird, like they talked about, because obviously it was Harrison and Khan, right? But she only named Khan as one of the people that she wanted to have murdered.
Yeah.
And Candace was like, well, you know, Khan is very gregarious and obnoxious and all these things.
Yeah, she said he's like brash and full of himself and all these things. So
he had to die? Is that the only reason?
Yeah. She's like, you can understand why somebody wouldn't like him. I mean, not enough to kill him, but he's one of those people that I guess either you like him or you hate him. But yeah, maybe he was just stuck in her memory more. I don't know.
Very strange.
After serving her sentence, she was released from Montgomery County Detention Center. She now lives in New York City. Barry Aaron has remarried. Their daughter Dana is now a psychologist. And this is so tragic and sad. Their son Joshua became a stockbroker, and he died in the September 11th attack on the World Trade Center.
Like, that is like the last thing I expected to read on the screen.
Yeah, because they just did like the end on-screen text. But that's so sad. Like after all that, you know, Barry and Dana had to go through, and then, man, that's just a lot on one family.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was hard for Ruth Ann as well to have her son killed, but...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's absolutely so true. That's a lot for one family to take.
Yeah. And she, didn't she, like, apologize?
She, the only person, she had not made a statement, but during her retrial, she did make a statement, and she did apologize to her children, who Joshua was still alive at that time.
Yeah. And they said that... Even though she's kind of like a textbook narcissist, she actually did
feel guilt.
Yeah. Toward her children. Like, yes. They were like, you could see this like raw emotion when she talked about them and when she was talking to them at her sentencing hearing. So it was like, they were like, she really did have that genuine caring for them, even if she kind of couldn't for anybody else.
At least there's that, I guess.
Yeah, and she still couldn't care about them enough to, like, think five steps ahead of, like, if I commit a murder, if I have their father killed. Like, yeah, what if he'd been killed? Now you've taken your kid's father away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get caught. Quit trying to think you're not.
So both parents taken away from them.
Yeah. Like, if you really love them, you're not going to do things like that to hurt them, but...
Right.
You know.
But she can't think outside of herself long enough.
Yeah, because her intent was not to hurt the kids with it. Her intent was to benefit herself. Like, oops, well, I didn't mean to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't count.
Exactly.
Yeah, doesn't count. But that's it. That's Ruth Ann Aaron. What? She's a free woman today.
A crazy story.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I feel that she should be free, but...
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.